feel the excitement from everybody back home, and we know that people are going to be staying up all night to watch us race, and we're just feeling great to have that support.
A record number of Alaskans are in South Korea for the Olympic Games. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 9th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, there will be no changes to the Iditarod board despite calls for a shakeup.
Our whole focus is we want to have a safe race. We want dogs to be safe, we want mushers to be safe, and we want a successful race.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities and in the 40 years of Alaska operations. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Matt Nuska, Susitna Borough Assemblymember Randall Kowalke, has been appointed today by Governor Bill Walker to the State Senate. Kowalke is a Republican and a retired businessman who lives in Willow. He would fill the seat vacated by Mike Dunleavy in January when he resigned to focus on running for governor. A majority of the 13 Republicans in the Senate must vote to support Kowalke before he can be seated. If they don't agree to the pick, Walker will have to choose another person. Kowalke was not one of the three people that the District E Republican Party nominated for the position. They were State Representative George Rauscher, Anchorage teacher Todd Smolden, and organic food worker Tom Brond. The other MATSU senators, David Wilson and Shelley Hughes, issued a joint statement saying they were, quote, disappointed with Governor Walker's decision to circumvent the traditional process, end quote. Governors traditionally have chosen replacement legislators from three district party nominees, but not every replacement has been made through this process. Most recently, District 40 Representative John Lincoln was picked despite not being one of the three local party nominees. More than 260 Alaska workers, including over 180 union employees, will be laid off in March as a result of a contract change with oil company BP. That's according to a report to the Alaska Department of Labor sent by the contractor, New Jersey-based Mistras Group Incorporated. According to a BP spokesperson, the decision to end the contract was made to reduce costs amid continued low oil prices. Mistras performed inspections on pipelines and other infrastructure for BP. The contract was instead awarded to Anchorage-based Kikavec, a subsidiary of Bristol Bay Industrial. The organization is non-union, according to BP. Kikavec is already doing a large portion of BP's pipeline inspection work. A Kikavec spokesperson says the company is now seeking more than 200 workers to fill the contract, although they would not say whether the contract change would result in a net loss of jobs. Kikavec is encouraging Mistras workers to apply for the jobs. Earlier today, Ben Anderson Agimek resigned from his position as a House District 38 legislative aide in order to dedicate more time to filling former Representative Zach Fansler's seat. KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis reports.
Ben Anderson Agimek once worked closely with Representative Zach Fansler, and now he's overseeing the search for his replacement. His old boss resigned following assault allegations last week. Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta Democrats selected Anderson Agimek to serve as their district's chair on Tuesday, and he said he felt it would be inappropriate for him to hold both positions at once. In an interview with KYUK Thursday afternoon, he said he wanted to dedicate more time to party matters, and he wouldn't be permitted to discuss his own party business during work hours at the legislature. The first task facing the new district chair is helping find nominees to fill out Fansler's term. As part of that process, Anderson Agimek will pick a handful of local Democrats to serve on a selection committee, which will evaluate potential candidates for the seat. There is not an actual application process for those interested in serving on the selection committee. Within the next 3 weeks, the committee will pick three potential candidates for Governor Walker's review, though the governor might request additional nominations. He must select Representative Fansler's replacement by March 14th. In Bethel, I'm Teresa Consarillas.
The Winter Olympics kick off in South Korea today. Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell is here with us in the studio to talk about the record number of Alaskan athletes competing for medals over the next few weeks. Hi, Emily.
Hey, Lori. So depending on how you count them, there are 18 athletes that either were born here or went to school here or live here now. So that's a pretty big number, 18 out of the total 242 athletes across all 50 states. Pretty impressive, right?
I would say that gives us bragging rights. So tell us, what sports are the Alaskan athletes competing in?
Cross-country skiing has by far the most Alaskans competing. Actually, half of the entire U.S. cross-country ski team is from Alaska. They're led by five-time Olympian Keegan Randall. Now, Keegan, of course, had high hopes for winning the first medal ever for the American women at the Olympics in Sochi in 2014. That didn't happen, but she's going back with a stronger team and even higher hopes. Some of that hope is resting on Sadie Bjornsson, who skis with Keegan at APU. She's had an amazing season skiing in Europe this year, so there's a really good chance that Sadie could make Olympic history in Pyeongchang.
We've heard a lot about the American women's cross-country ski team and about their medal potential, which is exciting. But what about the men's team? What's happening there?
Yeah, so they're sort of flying under the radar right now. But Sadie's younger brother, Eric Bjornsson, he was on the men's sprint team that placed sixth back at Sochi in 2014. Now, Eric is this tall, sort of goofy guy that's always smiling. I actually watched his first race as an Olympian back in 2014. And as he's crossing the finish line, he reaches up and pulls his pole around his head and twirls it around. He was so happy. And he actually finished 42nd in that race, but he was just smiling as he came across the finish line. I checked back in with Eric today. He says he's taking these Olympics a lot more seriously, and he's actually hoping to medal this year, potentially in that team sprint.
That's skiing. And we've also got a few Alaskan snowboarders competing.
Yeah, so snowboarders Ryan Stassel and Rosie Mancari, they're both from Anchorage. These are Stassel's second Olympics. He'll be competing in slopestyle and big air. Now, big air is actually making its Olympic debut this year, so that's pretty exciting. Stassel has medaled in World Cup races in both of those events, so he's got medal potential coming up in these Olympics. And so does Rosie Mancari. Mancari is competing in snowboard cross, and I couldn't actually picture what the event looked like, so I reached out to Mancari. So she sent us this explainer from Pyeongchang.
For those of you that don't know what snowboard cross is, it's a snowboard race where six of us race down the mountain on a course that has jumps, turns, rollers.
And there are six snowboarders going down that course at once, so it's a pretty exciting one to watch.
Wow. Definitely sounds exciting. Another, at least I consider it, an exciting sport and possibly the most popular at the Winter Olympics is figure skating. There's an Alaskan figure skater at these games. Tell us more about him.
So Keegan Messing is a skater from Girdwood. He's 26 years old. He grew up here. He still lives here. But he's actually on the Canadian Olympic team. His mom is from Alberta, Canada. So Keegan Messing will have fans all across the far north cheering him on.
The opening ceremonies were today, but figure skating and a couple other sports have already started. Alaskans can watch the first cross-country ski events later tonight. Is that right?
Yeah, so it's actually already Saturday in Pyeongchang right now. There's an 18-hour time difference between Alaska and South Korea. So that means Alaskans here can catch the women's cross-country skiathlon tonight at around 10 p.m. We actually heard from Keegan while she was out prepping for her first races in Pyeongchang, and she sent us this.
We love our fans back in Alaska. We've got over half the team here representing from our great state. So we can feel the excitement from everybody back home. And we know people are going to be staying up all night to watch us race. And we're just feeling great to have that support.
All right. That's great. Great to hear from Keegan Randall, one of the many Alaskan athletes competing over the next few weeks at the Olympics. And we were joined in the studio to help explain all this by Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell. Emily, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Lori.
You can find the full list of Alaskan athletes at our website, alaskapublic.org. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a UAA play brings the 1964 earthquake to the stage.
Hopefully the audience will be kind of comparing and seeing that this event has impacted a whole bunch of people in a lot of different ways.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Family Education Loan so parents, a spouse, or grandparents can help students with the cost of college or training programs in or outside of Alaska. Interest rates are lower than the Federal Plus, and no credit is required. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
Representatives from Norway, Canada, Greenland, Russia, and the U.S. met in Fairbanks in early February to talk about polar bears. Those countries are all part of a treaty signed in 1973 to coordinate protection of the species. And for about a decade now, those same countries have been holding meetings every 2 years to address the threats polar bears are facing, especially from climate change. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Ravenna Koenig reports.
At Pike's Waterfront Lodge on the Chena River in Fairbanks, dozens of people mill about a cavernous meeting room, different languages echoing off the walls. A weekend-long meeting of what's referred to as the Range States, or the five nations where polar bears live, has just ended. When the agreement on the conservation of polar bears was signed by these countries in 1973, the main issue they were trying to deal with was the dwindling number of polar bears in many areas, largely due to sport hunting. But now,
the number one challenge is loss of polar bear habitat, meaning sea ice.
James Wilder is the polar bear program leader for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He's one of several people representing the United States here. A few years ago, the Range States finalized an initiative called the Circumpolar Action Plan, which addresses things like human-bear-related conflicts, climate change, and bear management with oil and gas development. This meeting is, in part, a way for the group to catch up on the work they've done under that plan since they last met in 2015. One example, an update on an ongoing study on the effectiveness of bear spray in Arctic temperatures. As sea ice disappears, polar bears are spending more time on land, leading to more conflicts with humans.
It can range from polar bears raiding fishing camps on the coast to getting into landfills in coastal villages to traveling through and inhabiting oil and gas fields.
The delegates for the U.S. include the state of Alaska, the North Slope Borough, the State Department, and USGS, among others. Nicole Kinnearuk spoke for the North Slope Borough at the end of the meeting. She thanked the Range States for recognizing that indigenous knowledge is an important part of managing and researching polar bears, but she also urged them to include Native communities to a greater extent in that work.
What we have drawn from the last 2 days is there may be missing variables and a void that the intricacies of our indigenous knowledge on the ground may inform. It is important for our people that we are equitably involved in polar bear affairs, and it is our right under the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples.
Other groups representing indigenous perspectives at the meeting echoed this push for more inclusion. James Wilder says that this has been and will continue to be a point of focus for the Range States.
What we heard repeatedly during this meeting, and the Range States are committed to doing a better job with, is working more closely with Native people and incorporating traditional ecological knowledge and subsistence users' concerns and knowledge into the management and scientific processes that govern what we do.
Wilder says that one example of how the U.S. is working toward more inclusion is a scientific working group they have with Russia. The group is designing studies on polar bears in the Chukchi Sea and includes native hunters from both countries. The Range States will next convene in Norway in 2020. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig in Fairbanks.
With only 3 weeks until the 2018 Iditarod, there's more drama swirling around Alaska's premier long-distance dog mushing event. This week, the Iditarod Official Finishers Club called for the immediate resignation of Iditarod Board President Andy Baker. The club's letter to the board, first reported by the Anchorage Daily News, says Baker has, quote, jeopardized the integrity of our whole livelihood through his poor leadership. The club calls itself the Players Union for Iditarod Mushers, despite the demand that Baker resign to avoid what the letter says will be negative discourse overshadowing this year's race. Baker did not step down. After the board of directors meeting in Anchorage today, the board released a statement saying its members had decided unanimously to make no changes. Baker spoke to reporters shortly thereafter.
There's so much emotion, and there's so much emotion this time of year with the mushers are getting ready for the race. Everybody wants the race to do well. So I took it very positively. Everybody wants the race to do better. And the board, our whole focus is we want to have a safe race. We want dogs to be safe. We want mushers to be safe. And we want a successful race.
However, Baker says there may be changes coming after this year's Iditarod that will be in line with recommendations from a December report by consultants with the 4-Acre Group. Among other things, the report says the Iditarod should replace board members with conflicts of interest to restore trust with mushers, sponsors, and race fans. Baker, brother of Iditarod musher John Baker, says the board agrees but has not yet made a formal decision on the matter. Finishers Club President Wade Mars didn't respond to a request for comment in time for this story. Meanwhile, the Iditarod announced today the race would restart in Willow on its normal southern route after the March 3rd ceremonial start in Anchorage. Yukon Quest leader Alan Moore departed Dawson City this morning for the second half of the 1,000-mile race.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Good race, Alan.
All right, ready? All right.
Moore left the race's halfway point at 8:30 a.m. after completing a mandatory 36-hour rest. Leaving Dawson, the trail climbs over King Solomon's Dome and through the Black Hills before dropping to the Stewart and Pelly Rivers. It's more than 200 miles from Dawson to the next checkpoint at Pelly Crossing. Moore is still running the full team of 14 dogs he started the quest with last Saturday and emphasizes that his team's speed hinges on adequate rest.
So if we can continue to do that and continue to keep more dogs, then it will be hard, really, really hard for someone to catch me.
The mushers behind Moore have a lot of ground to make up. Paige Drobny is in second place and last year's winner Matt Hall in third. They're running about 9 hours behind. Meanwhile, attrition continues at the back of the pack. As KUAC's Zoe Rome reports, two mushers headed toward Dawson are out of the race.
The rugged trail and frigid temperatures are beginning to take their toll. Rookie musher Severin Cathry from Switzerland has been withdrawn from the race. Cathry called for help using his satellite tracker on the evening of February 8th near Clinton Creek. A team including an EMT and veterinarian responded, and after assessing that Cathry and his team were in good condition, gave him supplies so that he could continue his run to Dawson, where he will be withdrawn from the race. Bobby, a dog on Quest veteran Hugh Neff's team, has died. Neff had been running a conservative race with a relatively young team as his wife, Olivia Shank, completed the Quest 300 with his more veteran dogs. While it's unclear what led to the dog's death, Neff confirmed that he will scratch when he reaches Dawson. Race official Doug Harris spoke with Neff about his decision to scratch.
Say around noon yesterday, and advised me he was at Clinton Hospitality Creek. He was going to rest there overnight and then run in the heat of the day today and scratch in Dawson, and he was making that. He said that's because his team is young and he thought it'd be the best for them.
I'm Zoe Rome.
The loss of Cathry and Neff dwindles the quest field to 16, 10 fewer than started the race.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechmute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, disaster on stage. How do you tell the story of a catastrophe that throttled Alaska over 50 years ago? Well, if you're the University of Alaska Anchorage's theater department, you put on a play, of course. Earthquake 64 shows how Alaska's biggest quake affected ordinary citizens in Anchorage. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports.
Okay, listen. I really think that he might propose soon. We were talking the other day.
It's 1964, and Eileen and Greg have been dating for about 5 years.
4 years, 8 months.
Okay, 4 years, 8 months. During a Scrabble night with their friends, the two get into a fight over why Greg hasn't proposed yet. After a bitter argument, Eileen leaves.
Please don't leave.
I think you need to take some time to figure out what is really important.
Well, let me at least walk you.
No, I'll be fine.
The earthquake hasn't happened yet, but ironically, the disaster will help bring the two of them back together. Eileen is portrayed by Angela Colavecchio and is based on the life of Colavecchio's real grandmother, Jean.
My grandmother has this kind of amazing story that's almost cinematic that I've heard since I was a kid. She was working downtown on 4th Avenue in a flower shop, and when the earthquake hit, they were at work doing flower arrangements for Easter. And, you know, the building basically cracked in two. There's pictures that we've seen where, you know, the street is up by the roof.
Jean's story is one of many portrayed in Earthquake 64, a play that is ambitious, to say the least. There are 61 scenes in the production. The play begins by introducing the audience to the 60s.
Somebody shot the president. President Kennedy is dead.
The Soviets! Godless commies! They're un-American and they're dangerous.
The play was written collaboratively by the entire cast, and actor Taryn Haynes says there were originally even more scenes.
And in a way, it was kind of like throwing things at the wall to see what sticks. And of course, it was a lumpy disaster at first because it's rough. It's a starting place. And then it's been a process of kind of iteration and reimagination and revision.
Throughout the two-hour play, the 12-actor ensemble portray many different characters affected by the earthquake. And in between some of the scenes, the actors even portray themselves. Here's actress Devin Hawkins explaining her character on stage.
A tough-as-nails, Texas-born mother of three by the name of Jeannie Chance. Now, Jeannie had a very special impact on me because she wasn't looking for me and I definitely wasn't looking for her.
Some scenes even explain the history behind earthquakes.
Why, hello, everyone. I'm the obligatory scientist character, which you can tell from my lab coat and goggles.
Aside from various character plots, of which there are many, other parts include a physical demonstration of how earthquakes work, with the actors pretending to be tectonic plates. Musical numbers about what it's like to be in a tub during an earthquake.
To carry a person, the Betty in that tub just brought me to you.
And even an interpretive dance number about the dissolution of a marriage following the loss of children in a tsunami. It's set to this Panic at the Disco song. UAA theater professor and play director Brian Cook is aware that the various scenes aren't conventional, but he says the jarring nature of the play is intentional.
And so some of it is that we're setting things opposite each other, and hopefully the audience will be kind of comparing and seeing that this event has impacted a whole bunch of people in a lot of different ways.
And Cook thinks the sheer quantity of scenes will mean that everyone can take something from the play.
Everybody will find their own connections and their own storyline here. The things that matter to them is the stuff they'll take away from them. And hopefully they won't worry that they didn't catch everything, because I don't know that you could. I don't know that I have. And I know the play probably better than anyone.
Earthquake 64 is running at UAA starting tonight until February 18th. Among the aforementioned elements, audiences can expect talking dogs, conspiracy theorists, and even radio broadcasters.
KL7BT to anyone, KL7BT to anyone. There's been a disaster.
For AK, I'm Wesley Early.
KL7BT, this is KL7AGA.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Hannah Duro in Anchorage. Duro is an English graduate from UAA and a ski coach for Junior Nordic. She also really likes her flip phone.
enjoy having a flip phone. I lost it on an airplane, and I had to get a different phone. But they didn't sell the Razors anymore, because everyone moved into like the smartphone era. So I had to go to GCI, and I got like one of those like drug dealer phones that are like prepaid, and you like put $50 on them every month, and you like drop them in the garbage bin when you're done, and you like move on with life. So now I have a different black, shiny flip phone that is not a Razor. But I recently dropped it down like 15 different stairs, and it like hit each one on the way down, and it survived perfectly fine. A lot of people like it because they think it's like a throwback, and then they always want to play on it, and they ask if I have games. I don't have games. And then some people really don't like it, and they tell me multiple times in conversation that I need to get a different phone. And it's like, no, you shush. People keep telling me I need to get Snapchat. And it's like, I don't want Snapchat, though. I don't want Instagram. I don't want these things. They sound so complicated.
Hannah Duro lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Wesley Early and Victoria Peterson. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Grove, Elizabeth Harbaugh, and Emily Russell in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Ravenna Koenig and Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Zoe Rome in Dawson, and Teresa Katsarilis in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.